I'm Peter Solomon. It's the morning show on Minnesota's Jazz Station 88.5. Trumpeter Charles Tolliver started making a name for himself in the jazz scene as a sideman playing with alto saxophonist Jackie McLean, and he's on some of Jackie McLean's Blue Note records beginning in 1964. Subsequently, he worked with Horace Silver, Andrew Hill, Max Roach, the Jazz Messengers, Sonny Rollins, and made a long list of his own projects as well. In addition to his contributions as an instrumentalist and composer, one of the things that bolstered Tolliver's reputation as a major player in the post-bop jazz scene was the record label that he founded with pianist Stanley Cowell in 1970 called Strata East, which became a mainstay of 70s modern jazz, which featured music from artists like Clifford Jordan, Cecil McBee, and Gil Scott-Heron.
You see that black boy over there running scared? His old man in a bottle.
This summer saw the reissue of Tolliver's debut recording. It's been packaged as Right Now and Then by Mack Avenue Jazz. It's a 1968 session that includes alto saxophonist Gary Bartz, pianist Herbie Hancock, bassist Ron Carter, and drummer Joe Chambers. We've been playing that record quite a bit on Jazz 88 recently, and that inspired me to reach out to Charles Tolliver for a conversation. Tolliver is now 84 years old. He remains sharp and insightful, and as he spoke to me via Zoom from his home, he was holding his trumpet in his hand. I think our conversation interrupted his practice routine. In any case, he generously spoke with me for about a half an hour. Our conversation began by my asking him to talk about how he came to play the trumpet and decide on jazz as a career. So I'd like to get artists to talk a little bit about their background. I know that you were born in Jacksonville and moved to New York when you were young, like about 10 years old. I was wondering how you came into playing jazz.
Well, I guess you could say I was born with it, you know. I probably was around 5 years old when I started listening to it on the record player, and so I was always going to be what I am from that moment.
Who were some of your early inspirations on your instrument?
Well, at 5 or 6 years old, I was listening to Norman Granz's Jazz at the Philharmonic, where he had all of the originals being recorded from those great concerts, Carnegie Hall and other places. And of course, Dizzy Gillespie and Charlie Parker were on those recordings. But the first trumpet player to catch my ear was Charlie Shavers, who was one of the great trumpeters back in that era. Probably it was Charlie Shavers, and then Dizzy Gillespie and so forth.
I read that you were studying to be a pharmacist at Howard University in the 60s when you decided that you would come home to New York and instead focus on being a professional musician. What led to that decision?
Well, I was always focused on being what I was always going to be. But, you know, I had the aptitude for pharmaceutical studies, and I thought that that would be an interesting stopover station, so to speak. In my junior year, I just made the decision that I had to go with what I was born to do, really. And so I came on back home and started jamming, you know.
How did you happen to hook up with Jackie McLean? Because you end up being a sideman on at least three of his Blue Note albums.
Well, once I got back home, I started going into the jam sessions, and there was a well-known place called the Blue Coronet in Brooklyn. And so one night I was in there jamming, and there was a gentleman at the bar, you know, when you come off to take a break from jamming, and he said, "Okay, my name is Jim Harrison. And this Jim Harrison was to become a really beloved figure for us here in New York, because he helped foster a lot of concerts for the guys to play on. Anyway, so he said to me, Jackie McLean might be looking for a new trumpet player. And he said, I'll send you to him. You tell him I sent you. And so he told me where he was. I went there and I told him that Jim Harrison said, come see you, that you might be looking for another trumpet player. He said, well, come see me at this time and at this place, which turned out to be his home at the time, which was located one block away from that fable club called Slugs, which was one of the main hot spots for the music at that time. And so I came to his house and he said, take out your instrument and play these tunes, which were his tunes. And then we did that. And then he said, do you have any tunes? And so I said, well, actually I do. And we played a few of those. And he said to me, I'm going to put you on my next record date. You tell people that, you said, you got to be kidding. I said, well, that's what happened, you know. So cut to the point where, okay, the rest is history. I mean, if it hadn't been for Jackie McLean, I certainly would not be where I am today.
Blue Note is kind of famous for having been a home to a lot of great kind of boundary pushing music. You know, Alfred Lion and Francis Wolff had a reputation as great producers. I was wondering what your experience was with them. And then my follow-up question would be like, what led to starting Strata East Records?
Well, after I broke in with Jackie on that first recording entitled It's Time, Alfred Lion was still running his company. And his procedure, which was his procedure for all of those great recordings all of those years, was to have a day or so of rehearsal at a famous studio here in Manhattan. I can't think of the name of it. Anyway, he would have whoever the musicians were going to be on the recording with the leader come to the studio, and he would time the songs, and more or less a decision would be made how many choruses. If you were a brand new guy, it would be how many choruses you would play on it. So on the day of the recording, we would all meet at the famous hotel there at Lincoln Center, which is called the Empire Hotel, and a taxi, one of those old original checkered cabs, you know, with the jumper seat and all of that, you know, big enough to get us all in there in one swoop. And over to New Jersey, across the George Washington Bridge, we'd go to Rudy Van Gelder's studio. And it was expected that because there was a rehearsal prior to this, that the recording would be done inside of 3 hours. So that was Alfred Lion's procedure for Blue Note. And all of the recordings that I made with Jackie and Horace Silver and Andrew Hill were all done in that manner.
Thank you. little bit of music there featuring Charles Tolliver on trumpet. That's a composition by Horace Silver called Kindred Spirits off the album Serenade to a Soul Sister from 1968. I'm Peter Solomon. You're listening to The Morning Show, and today I'm speaking with trumpeter Charles Tolliver. So what led you to, hook up with Stanley Cowell, and what was the idea behind forming Strata East Records?
Well, Stanley Cowell and I met for the first rehearsal that Max Roach had called because he put together a new quintet in 1967. So Stanley and I met for the first time at the rehearsal, and we immediately bonded. And for the next years that we did our tenure with Max, we were always together. And during the time with Max, I had made a decision that I was going to make my first recording, you know, as a leader. I did that in 1968, and this is the recording, which is now entitled Right Now and Then. And I had on that recording, of course, Herbie Hancock, Ron Carter, Gary Botts, and Joe Chambers.
What do you remember about that session with, you know, you have two members of Miles Davis's rhythm section at the time, and Joe Chambers and Gary Botts. What does listening to that music evoke for you now?
Well, we were all living in New York at that time. And of course, Herbie and Ron had moved on from Miles Davis. By 1968, they were long gone. And Joe Chambers and I met when we were teenagers. And Gary Botts and I met when we were teenagers. So we knew each other well and had jammed or played at some point together. And so this was going to be the men that I would call on for this first recording. And I had already mapped out the songs and the programming, how it would go. And following up on being weaned with the Blue Note session way of things, Alfred Lyons, you know, you rehearse. And then you go in and you do it inside of 3 hours. That's what we did. And the result is what is now, Right Now and Then.
I'm Peter Solomon, speaking today with legendary jazz trumpeter Charles Tolliver. In addition to Tolliver's impressive credentials as a composer and performer, he also co-founded a legendary jazz label, an independent artist-owned jazz record company called Strata East Records, which he started with Stanley Cowell in the early 1970s.
So, after our tenure with Max, Stanley and I, we said, well, what else can we do? Well, let's make a recording, you know, with a big band around the quartet that I had started in 1969 called Music King. We weren't thinking necessarily about starting a label. We just wanted to get it out, you know? And of course we shopped it, but none of the record producer players in town at that time, 1970, 71, took it on. So we basically decided that we would put it out. But I made the decision that if we were going to do that, it would have to be as professional as the big guys. So in the interim, once we put it out, there was the occasion where we did a concert in Detroit, and there were some great musicians there who were friends of Stanley, Kenny Cox and Charles Moore. Now, they had already started their own entrepreneurship, but it wasn't in recordings. It was in bringing in musicians like us to do concerts at the Detroit Museum, you know, where they put on a lot of concerts. While we were there, we told Kenny and Charles Moore that we had just brought out this recording and we're full steam ahead. And they had a corporation that they call Strata. And so they said, well, why don't you guys become the East of Strata? You can sell stock or whatever, you know. And so I said to Stanley when we got back to New York, I said, listen, man, Kenny and Charles, they, you know, they're selling stock to family members and stuff. We don't have no time for that, you know. But I liked the name Strata East. I immediately hyphenated Strata East and incorporated it. And that became the label name for our one record endeavor at the time.
Wow.
Billy Taylor had just started a radio station called WBLS here, dedicated to jazz and a certain number of hours, and he had a great disc jockey at the time named Ed Williams. And he laid on that record, and it started to sort of get itself into the arena, especially in the New York metropolitan area. And Stanley and I had met a young lady. She's now deceased. She passed away some time ago, named Mary Jo Johnson. And she was at Epic Records in whatever department was dealing with distribution across the United States. And she loved the idea of what we were doing. And she gave me the distributor partners across the United States and also the mom and pop ones. And I started with the mom and pop ones. You know, one record, two records, three records, four records, five records, and so on. And about a year in, musicians here in New York were starting to pay attention that this was going on, that it wasn't going away. It was happening. And the great Clifford Jordan, he decided he wanted to throw in with product which he had already produced. Product like the Pharoah Saunders, Yusuf Ozam, and about three or four others. And we said, yeah, of course, you know. We explained how we were doing the business side of things, and that was fine with him. And so that really helped to jumpstart things. And I would say around 1973, 74, we started to take on a lot of guys who were knocking on the door because the whole musician community in New York was aware of what was going on. And around 1974, we got a knock on the door, and it was a spoken word artist by the name of Gil Scott-Heron. He had heard about what we were doing, and he wanted to put a product out, which, of course, became known as Winter in America.
From the Indians, welcome to pilgrims, and to the buffaloes who once ruled a plain. Like the vultures circling beneath the dark clouds, looking for the rain.
I would say that between 1970 and 1980, there were some 60-odd product of different iterations of music and artists. And around 1980, I decided that it was time to take a rest. What I meant by that is that when Stanley and I started this thing, I said, okay, but we're never going to stop playing. We're never going to stop being the musicians that we always were. Never allow this endeavor to interfere with being out there playing the music. And I decided that it was now time to just concentrate on that. And of course, we had an office. So I shut down the office, but I never shut down what we were doing in terms of distributing. I didn't have to worry about an office. I didn't have to worry about coming in and checking and seeing what's going on. Because at that point, the Tower Records of the time were able to have our product, easily have it from pressings, from distribution deals in Japan and Europe. So throughout the 80s and 90s was how the product still held its place with audiophiles, you know? And in the 2000s, around 2017, I did a substantial distribution for a short period of time in the UK. And then my son decided he wanted to take over and run with it. And that's how Mac Avenue came up. We had a partnership with Mac Avenue. And of course, my original recording in 1968 would have been the recording that I would have used to start Strata East. So it's apropos that it enters the catalog in the position where it should have been all along.
Are you still playing? I saw that you were holding your trumpet when you were talking to me originally.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. I'm still, the reason I am where I am is because of this trumpet, which my grandmother, first one she got for me when I was 8 years old. So I was always going to be doing this, playing the trumpet. All of the other things, you know, composing and being a band leader and, of course, starting the Strata East label are ancillary to this piece of iron, you know. And so, yeah, I'm still trying to beat up on the trumpet.
It never ends, does it?
No, it can't, because musicians who are lifetime musicians, this is what they were born for, and trying to be something else will never work, you know? So and you are happiest in the end because of staying with that which becomes your vocation for life.
Charles Tolliver, it has been a pleasure talking to you. I've enjoyed hearing your album and playing it on the air, and I'm really thrilled to have this opportunity, and I wish you well.
Well, thank you very much.